Reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 3, Text 20. Text 20 is the 16th incarnation of Godhead. Although in the 9th canto mentions him as the 6th incarnation of Godhead. But maybe that has to do with the Lila avatars chronologically. Translation reads, in the 16th incarnation of the Godhead, the Lord, as Bhrigupati, annihilated the administrative class, Kshatriyas, 21 times, being angry with them because of their rebellion against the Brahmanas, intelligent class. Purport. The Kshatriyas, or the administrative class of men, are expected to rule the planet by the direction of the intelligent class of men, who give direction to the rulers in terms of the standard Shastras, or the books of revealed knowledge. The rulers carry on the administration according to that direction. Whenever there is disobedience on the part of the Kshatriyas, or the administrative class, against the orders of the learned and intelligent Brahmanas, the administrators are removed by force from the posts, and arrangement is made for better administration. Which this must apply to before Kali Yuga, because you'd have a very busy. Brahmana class. In Gita Govinda, the Dasavatar Stotra includes Bhrigupati and speaks in the same way, Bhrigupati Rupa Jaya Jagadish Hari, that he annihilated the administrative class 21 times. Which Tri Sapta, or 3 times 7, that's 21. Tri Sapta Kritva Kupito. Nikshatram Akaron Mahim. He traveled about the surface of the earth, annihilating kings. So the Bhagavatam describes this form of the Lord in the 9th canto of the Bhagavatam. The name Rama, as in the Mahamantra Rama, can refer to Parashuram. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada describes, some people ask, does this name Rama mean Lord Ramachandra, or does it mean Lord Balarama? And Prabhupada answers by saying it can be either or, it is both, but in fact it's also Parashurama. In the index of the Bhagavatam, under Rama, it just mentions Parashurama. So he's referred to that way also. Parashurama was the son of Janmadagni, and Venuka was his mother, and Janmadagni is in the line of Bhrigu. So he's Bhrigupati. Referred to that way. his manifestation spans over two yugas. He was present during Ramchandra's time in Treta Yuga, and he was also present Bhishma fought with, received weapons. He was taught in military science by Parashuram and fought with him in their whole dealing with Amba. So he lived or was present for a long time. The situation of his killing the Kshatriyas 21 times is described in the following way. There was one king during the same time as Ramachandra and same time as Jamadagni, king of the Haihayas, whose name was Kartavirya-arjuna. And Kartavirya-arjuna was a worshipper of Dattatreya. And he underwent severe austerities in his worship of Dattatreya. And he then, by pleasing Dattatreya, he was given a benediction. So he chose a very interesting benediction. He chose to have 1,000 arms. I'd like to have 1,000 arms. Okay, you can have 1,000 arms. And he was very powerful. So, to describe his prowess, Sukadeva Goswami explains that one time he was in the river Narmada sporting with women. And to show off his prowess, he moved his arms in such a way, his 1,000 arms, that the river Narmada stopped flowing. Because it stopped flowing, it was like a dam, and upstream the water was flooding the countryside. And that was a big disturbance for Ravana, because he was also on tour for conquering, and he had a camp by the side of the river Narmada, and the camp became flooded. So he went downstream to find out who is causing disturbance in my camp. And when he saw Kartavirya-arjuna sporting in the water with the women, he started insulting him. Kartavirya-arjuna didn't like being insulted. So he came out of the water and fought with Ravana and easily captured Ravana, tied him up, and brought him like a prisoner. Sukadeva Goswami says like a monkey, and brought him to his capital city of Mahishmati. And then later just let him go. You can leave. Totally humiliated. And how powerful was Ravana? Just like capturing a monkey. So Kartavirya-arjuna was very, very powerful. And because he was powerful and had received some benedictions and had these 1,000 arms and all kinds of other opulences, guess what? He was proud. So one time as he was moving about with his soldiers in the forest, he came across the hermitage of Jamadagni. And when entering into the hermitage of Jamadagni, Jamadagni was a brahmana. And a brahmana receiving a king. So it would normally be the other way around. The king is receiving the brahmana, but here it's the brahmana is receiving the king. like when Ram was in the forest and he entered into various hermitages of different sages. So the scene was similar, but the behavior was very different. Kartavirya Arjuna was envious of Jamadagni because he was obviously more powerful than he was, and he was proud of his power, but he was more powerful and also more opulent. He was proud of his opulences, and one of the he cared for him, Jamadagni cared for him and his entourage so lavishly, although he is a resident of the forest, because he had this kamadenu. And Kartavirya Arjuna decided, I should have that kamadenu. And so on his way out of the ashram of Jamadagni, he and his associates stole the kamadenu. Not a nice guest. He stole his kamadenu and the calf of the kamadenu and secretly tiptoed off into the distance. And when Parashuram came to know that the kamadenu was stolen, he was very angry, and so he picked up his axe, although he's a brahmana. And he had been undergoing austerity, so he was dressed in just a deerskin. And with his axe in hand, he went charging towards the capital of Kartavirya Arjuna. And he was in such an angry mood that when he approached Mahishmati, the capital city, Kartavirya Arjuna panicked. He could see, he's powerful and he's very angry. So Kartavirya Arjuna directed that his entire army attack one person. And his entire army consisted of 17 Akshohini divisions of soldiers. That's like more than Jarasandha had. One Akshohini division of soldiers, Bhagavatam describes, it's approximately 22,000 chariots, each drawn by three horses, so 66,000 horses, and foot soldiers or infantry, 109,000 plus, times 17. And he released them all, along with his 1,000, he not only had 1,000 armed, but he had 1,000 sons. So his 1,000 sons, with their 1,000 bows and arrows drawn at once, released those bows and those arrows to fire upon one person. But Parashuram, with one bow, doesn't say how many arrows, he counteracted all the arrows of all the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna at once. And with his other weapons, axe and other weapons, he annihilated the entire 17 Akshohini divisions of soldiers of Kartavirya Arjuna. Kartavirya Arjuna was enraged. So he came charging out with his special super chariot, and with his 1,000 arms, he was firing arrows and other types of weapons at Parashuram. Parashuram cut down all the weapons with his bow and arrow, cut off, no, with his axe, he cut off the 1,000 arms of Kartavirya Arjuna. Then he cut off the head of Kartavirya Arjuna. And the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna panicked. They ran back to the palace. So Parashuram, son of Bhrigu, or his descendant of Bhrigu, went back to his father's ashram and gave him an account of what had happened. And when Janmadagni received him, he heard everything that happened and chastised his son, said that the king is the representative of all the demigods. And yes, stealing is not good, but what you've done is sin. You've killed the king and so many soldiers just because of your anger. This is not good. For that sin, you should atone by making pilgrimage to holy places throughout the land. So on the order of his father, that's what he did. And after some time, he returned. Then another incident took place where his mother, Renuka, was taking her bath at the river, and she happened to see in the river was a king of the Gandharvas, doesn't give a name or details, and along with with the king of the Gandharvas, a number of very, very beautiful celestial women, and they were sporting in the river Narmada. So Renuka was very chaste, but her mind was foolishly entertaining the thought what it would be like to associate with this king of the Gandharvas. So when she returned to the ashram, Jamadagni, being the seer that he was, the rishi that he was, he could understand what the thoughts of his wife had been. And he severely rebuked her and approached his sons, his older sons, and asked them to kill his mother, to kill their mother. They didn't like that idea. They didn't want to kill their mother. So he became very angry with them, and he approached Parashuram and indicated that he should kill his mother. Parashuram immediately went and picked up his axe and killed his mother. And knowing that what would happen next, is Jamadagni said, "You please me very much, what benediction would you like?" He said, I'd like the benediction that you bring my mother back to life and my brothers back to life, because he also killed his brothers for failing to fulfill the order of the father. Please bring my mother and brothers back to life and restore their consciousness in such a way they won't even remember what happened. Janmadagni smiled and said, "Very well, so be it." So now he had a mother and some brothers again. But life doesn't remain peaceful. The sons of Kartavirya Arjuna were stewing about the death of their father, and they wanted to get revenge. So they made a plan that they would visit the hermitage of Jamadagni, and that they would do so at a time when Parashuram was away. And so Parashuram and his brother Vasuman and other brothers were off somewhere doing their austerities and practices, brahminical practices. So then that's when they came to the hermitage of Jamadagni again, and it was just his wife and Jamadagni. Jamadagni was performing a fire sacrifice and was totally absorbed in meditation upon the personality of Godhead. Well, the sons of Kartavirya Arjuna didn't pay any attention to what he was doing, and they attacked him with weapons, and they killed him. And in fact, they cut off his head and brought his head back to the kingdom of Mahishmati, thinking, victory, we got our revenge. And when the wife saw, they saw him, she saw her husband being killed brutally. So she called very loudly for her son, "Oh Rama, oh Rama, please come." So although they were some distance away, Parashuram heard the cries of his mother, and they came back at once, and she explained exactly what had happened. And Parashuram told his brothers, "You stay here with our mother, take care of the funeral of our father. You're the elder brothers, you take care of the funeral. I'm going to take revenge. I'm going to destroy the 1,000 sons of Kartavirya." And so he did. With his axe, he killed all 1,000 of the sons of Kartavirya. But he was not satisfied, knowing that not only Kartavirya's sons, but so many Kshatriyas throughout the land are deviating in irreligious ways, and they should also be killed. So he took on the task of traveling throughout the land, annihilating anyone who is a Kshatriya. People were not so enthusiastic to identify themselves as Kshatriyas for a while. Incognito Kshatriyas. And Prabhupada explains that many of them fled. And in fact, in speaking to his Western audience, he said, "You European and American boys and girls, you are descendants of those kings who were fleeing from Parashuram and populated lands in Europe and in Greece and in other such places just to avoid the chopper of Parashuram." After he had completed that, of course, you know from Ramayana, the encounter with Ram and Lakshman with Parashuram after Ram's wedding with Sita, and they were heading back to Ayodhya, this ominous, dark, foreboding sky indicated something very, very dangerous and inauspicious was about to happen. So it turns out that Parashuram was traveling through the forest, and there was an encounter between Parashuram and Ramachandra. Of course, Ramachandra was a Kshatriya, as was Dasarath, and you know Parashuram's program was to kill the Kshatriyas. So there was some contest between Parashuram and Ramachandra. First it was stringing of a bow, as Ram had already strung a bow, and because Parashuram had this mood of fighting against the Kshatriyas was broken when the bow was broken. When Ram broke the bow, the mood of Parashuram completely changed from the angry mood of a brahmana bringing retribution to the deviated Kshatriyas to he became then a very calm, peaceful brahmana after the breaking of that bow. Or stringing of the bow, rather. He strung the bow and then said to Parashuram, "Now that I've strung the bow, it can't go unused. Please tell me how I should use the bow. Because the intended purpose that you gave it to me was that I could use it for fighting against you. Is that how you would like me to use it?" that he spoke in his Brahminical mood. So the message again in the purport of the verse is that as Parashuram did, so Vedic culture teaches that the Brahmanas have a responsibility. It's to guide the Kshatriyas. The Kshatriyas have a responsibility to receive the guidance of the Brahmanas, and the guidance of the Brahmanas is to be in terms of the scriptures. So the Brahmanas have those functions, become learned in the scriptures and to teach the scriptures, particularly to teach the administrators. So that they, what will be administrated will be the principles of scripture. So the Brahmanas, the Kshatriyas were to learn the scriptures, but to be submissive to the Brahmanas and how to apply them if there was any question or discrepancy. So that's what Prabhupada wants us to understand from the story of Parashuram. Brahmanas guide, and if situations become greatly deviated, Brahmanas should step in and correct. Of course, they need to be correct, not just step in people, and they need to be spiritually powerful. That's their qualification. And with that spiritual qualification, then they actually have the prowess. And it's most unique that the exhibition of the prowess of Parashuram was with an axe or by Kshatriya spirit, although he was a Brahmin. Often Prabhupada would refer to the removal of Vena, the son of Anga, by Brahminical power. Here's the description of Parashuram, the 16th incarnation of the Personality of Godhead. Any comments or questions?
Guru Maharaj, when I'm hearing these past times involving killing, the only thing that is coming to my heart is there is of course appreciation and some faith that Krishna can do anything, but also feeling about a lot of violence. So I'm concerned when teaching to children, should we be very careful what pastimes? Because I had an experience once, I was telling the story of Krishna telling Dhenugasura to one child on the phone, one of my friend's child, and the mother told me later on that since then the child is becoming very becoming more violent. So she was telling, please tell only the other pastimes, not just killing pastimes. So I was just wondering how we should be. This is,
boys will be boys. I've not heard Prabhupada indicate that we should only tell the non-violent pastimes, because boys will be boys. You know, supposing they don't hear those pastimes of Krishna, boys will be boys. They'll pick up on something somewhere else. I mean, the cartoons are filled with violence. And why? Because it markets. And so where's the purification? And part of parenting of a boy And you know, as boys will be boys and girls will be girls, so the boys being, you know, sporting and competitive and, you know, liking confrontational encounters, it's like, it's thrilling. So to elevate it to the transcendental platform, that the pastimes of the Lord are there. It's, you know, from a moral platform, it's the struggle of good against evil. Now, what do you do when there's evil? You can be a pacifist and let evil prevail. But the Supreme Lord is not a pacifist who lets evil prevail. He checks evil. Doesn't mean that we should be evil. We should be imitating the Lord. But you know, but children do that. But it's purifying to them. What I've seen with children that have that, you've seen kids, they can get their club. I'm Hanuman. You know, do the Hanuman program for a while. Or they get a sword. But if they're fighting the demons. And you know, after some time that playful spirit goes away. But you know, those same children can be instructed. This is for the demons. It's not for anybody. If one actually has care, so if you don't have care of the child and you're just telling stories, then I suppose you could pick some other ones. But with your own children or devotee children that are in a devotional family, then you know, explaining where Krishna's strength, what he's doing, and it's appropriate. Pritranaya sadhanam vinashaya jaduskritam is not, you know, always vinash. There's so many nice Sudama Brahman and Krishna and there's no violence, nice stories.
I have one related and one unrelated question. The related question is that who is Dattatreya?
He was mentioned earlier. He's an incarnation of the Lord. They were Anasuya and Atri, I believe, the parents. He's an incarnation of. It's described, he's a plenary incarnation of Vishnu. There's there's three. Durvasa, Dattatreya, and then Lord Brahma, manifestation of Lord Brahma. All three appeared. She said, I would like sons like you, so you'll have three sons. And there's not a lot of description about Dattatreya in the Bhagavatam. I don't know where there's a lot of description of him anywhere. He instructed transcendental knowledge. He's often pictured with animals surrounding him, like especially dogs. He's, you know, very kind upon all living beings. He's very popular in Gujarat. but not so well known in general. Not commonly worshipped. What was your other question?
Other question is kind of a follow-up on the discussion that was raised by Vijayachandra Prabhu yesterday.
Follow-up on which discussion?
On the extending to students in the college. And you were elaborating on, we have to give some positive experience to the students for them to get more excited.
I'm listening.
So I was thinking that like one of the struggles that I face is that we tend to meet them like once in a week, and like the rest of the week is practically kind of out of touch. And if we had been living close to the university campus, then like there could have been a possibility that we could have got some experience on a daily basis by attending some programs. So it becomes very challenging to actually give them an experience just by going there and like trying to address the needs of different varieties of mindsets that they are carrying. So I hope you can kindly share some thoughts on how we can give them some spiritual experience which they would like or which they can sustain.
There are three separate issues. One is how much time, you know, surface interaction you have with them, and this notion of experience. It's just they're more moved by an experience than by knowledge. They want an experience. You know, they're so and that helps them, you know, become attracted. Even they don't know exactly what it is that they're becoming attracted to. It's even different than action oriented. I mean, a thing of a trend of young people today is social action. Make a change. Make a difference in the world. The social activism. So like this sustainability, the group is not, let's stop talking, let's start doing, let's make a difference. It's just, you know, it catches the wave of the spirit of young people today. So where they can do something, not like, you know, talk about, but they can roll up their sleeves and, you know, dig a garden or something. That's something that Devamrita Maharaj described. That their program started to take off when they had a garden next to their little place, just for their own little garden. And you know, one of the guests came and saw a devotee working in the garden, so he wanted to go work in the garden. And when they understood they could work in the garden, it was like a whole thing. And let's go work in the garden. So they just started making a big garden, like their whole yard became a garden. Everyone wanted to come and do gardening, and then it became like a talk of the campus. Hey, let's go over to the Krishna place and do some gardening. As opposed to knowledge about something. So that's part of, I guess that, you know, that's the third thing is kind of like the second thing. It's what the experience is. It's not just talk about something, but do something. Or the example of kirtan is another one. They don't necessarily know what kirtan is, but they feel something, they experience something. They like that. So of course we want to give them transcendental knowledge, so that experience will be properly guided, and they won't just go to, you know, something impersonal or something other that's also an experience of kirtan, for example, but it's not properly focused. But to help people get there, something that can, it's something, it's worth considering. Of what can, with that limited time that you have, what can you do that will provide an experience, something that they can relate to, would grab a hold of them. At Carbondale, I made the same presentation, University of Southern Illinois, whatever it's called, and two American girls came, and they came up afterwards, and, you know, they said, "I'm an American. Can I shake your hand?" This is like a girl with tattoos on her arm and on her legs and stuff. Said, "My name is, you know, so and so, and, you know, I just want you to know that using our language, I'm on board." She said, "I want bhakti. You know, can you give us some teachings about bhakti and some practices that we can do?" I mean, that was the immediate beginning. Because I, you know, this other thing was, you know, I'm already there. She said I was sitting through the whole thing saying, "Okay, great, let's get to the thing. This is the sales pitch, let's get to the thing. I already bought in." So, such a person, you know, so I said, "Japa," that he make sure she gets some beads and you start chanting. Next time I come, we'll speak about improving your chanting. She said, "Great. This is what I want." So, not the same voice, but that girl that asked her a question yesterday evening about, you know, "I don't have time, I'd like to do practices." Such a person is going to get drawn into something of practice. So, you know, you can work with a small group of people that's what they want, is, you know, some commitment to something that's, they're going to experience something. Or, you know, a little bit broader or a little bit broader. So that, you know, they feel that they're part of something that's happening. Because, like, that, you know, the social pressure of, I'm not just this odd person over here, but there's some other people that are interested. So there's, anyway, there are different approaches that a leader of a program can take. You know, you have an array of things, and ask them what they want, and you provide it. And you provide it, and then they're ready to accept what you want to give them. A little bit like what you've done with the yoga thing, and some of the people, they're real slow. That's all they want is yoga, and then their prasadam, of course. But some of those people will then move into the hearing because, you know, you provided what they want. And you're about something else a little bit different, so they'll come and listen. Same with, you know, like a cooking class or kirtan or yoga or something that's not, you know, just, you know, our standard.
Guru Maharaj, like this sustainability presentation, yeah. Spiritual economics. So, I really wonder at my stage, what can I really do? Like, yes, one aspect is to cultivate purity and invest more in hearing and chanting, but is that where the focus should remain, or is there something more that can happen?
not sure what you're asking. You started with the presentation, and then you asked, you know, in my stage, what can I do? Are you talking like, you know, what action-oriented thing can you do? Is that your question?
Yes.
Depends on what you want to do. You don't have to make that your project. Your service need not be the same thing that you saw in that presentation, or otherwise you're a failure or something like that. Say it in a different way. Prabhupada at one point wanted that each of the, at the point in time when centers became very strong and very successful, they should have such a project. But it doesn't mean that the people that were doing the service at the temple that made the temple strong should stop that and go join that project. They were making the center strong. They were doing the preaching, the book distribution, and the, you know, prasadam distribution, and the harinam, and the, you know, the maintaining the deity worship in the temple, and all of that that made the center strong. Then, when strong, so here's something that during our Building Bridges conference, Rukmini pressed Devamrita Maharaj twice. He said, "I understand you're the new GBC in Kitanagari. Can you tell me what your vision is? Like, what's next?" He didn't want to answer her. He artfully dodged her question. But she asked it again later, next day. So he said, "Okay. You know, Chanakya Pandit said, don't disclose, but, you know, you're pressing me, so I want to make connections with urban centers, because I don't see Gitanagari being successful unless there's connection with urban centers." And he said that Shivaram Maharaj had said we would never have been able to create this project if it hadn't been for the urban Budapest center. Although the people in Budapest, the center, the devotees, don't want to live like that. And you have to want to live like that to live like that. But they want to be supportive of those who want to live like that. So, you know, as you probably did, you helped participate in creating that presentation. So there's a service. And, you know, participating in educating people about, you know, so you have there's a different role. You're assisting your husband who's preaching at Tufts University, and that's what you should do. Be Krishna conscious and be happy. And, you know, your combined contribution in that regard is what you've already done. Some persons have to help make people aware, and some persons have to be showing by example. Here's how you do it. In speaking about ideal grihastha life, it's not that, you know, to fulfill it I have to become a grihastha. To speak about ideal grihastha life.
Mm-hmm. Maharaj, my husband reminded me a question I also had following upon teaching children. Two parts. One is we had a discussion for engaging children in Gita Nandi. We should have archery, teaching archery
okay.
to the children. One message Andhurnar Mataji shared was like I was going to put a picture of a bird, so I was telling the pastime of Arjuna. But I think that was cancelled because she suggested that I not do it because that would induce the killing propensity in children. So, then we didn't have archery this time.
That's not what it does. It's a sport. I did archery when I was in a camp, and I wasn't equating it with now I have some way I can kill people. It's like any other sport. You know, put a ball through a hoop. It's a sport. Same answer. It can be used as an act of violence, but it's in and of itself it's not an act of violence. It's a sport. It's a skill. You know, people can hit keys to ignite bombs, but you know, you can type on a typewriter, you're not you're being violent. What else?
Teaching according to the psychophysical nature of the children. For example, all may not have it. Like we have one activity for all the children, but all the children may not have the same propensity. Like
sure.
Like our whole philosophy, we talk about Varnashrama, you know,
okay.
engaging according, but like we teach but the same thing for all the children. So how it's a deep topic for everyone. How
that's nuts. The activities, common activities for children are just common activities. Propensity has much more to do with occupation, you know, career. Like this conversation with the young student that came up yesterday started with, how does one understand whether one is a capitalist or an intellectual? So, you know, here's some resources, and a capitalist comes along and thinks, with this I can make some money. It's just nature. But, you know, activities with children, it's not the same. Certainly, in any group, some are going to like this and some are going to like more of that. But that's okay. It's not the, you know, according to propensity thing. The application of that according to propensity principle has to do much more with their nature. You know, some kids will be much more happy just sitting reading books. And some kids will be much more happy playing and running around. Anyway, but all kids like to play and run around. It's universal. Even the ones that like to read books also like to run around. Don't get too carried away with analysis. You have something?
Yes, good news. one of the things I'm finding that I'm really having struggled with is the judgmental attitude, being judgmental of others, not just devotees, but people in general,
say, even to those whom I come in contact with while I'm trying to extend. And it's keeps on coming. It's like sometimes I think it's evaluation, but maybe proper to maybe it protects me, but sometimes I get carried away, and it's finding it really difficult to give it up.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with parenthood, my mentor had warned or advised that, you know, be cautious about being judgmental about, you know, the child that you may receive. So since then I've been thinking a lot about it, and I see more and more layers of that anartha in my heart. So if you could kindly share where it might be coming from, like what are some of the causes of this?
If one is secure, how can one be discriminating at the same time not judgmental?
Mm.
How can the faculty of intellect be fully operative? You're making discriminations or discernments between things, but you're not judgmental. It's when both are when there's one is very secure and in one's safe, protected, sheltered relationship with Krishna. Because otherwise it's competition. And, you know, judgment means, you know, putting another person down so that I can come up.
Mm.
But that's not necessary if one is secure in their relationship with Krishna. So then a Brahmana can be neutral. They can discern but remain neutral. That's lost if to the degree that one becomes then competitive.
Mm.
Toward the other, or it's like, you know, another way of saying the same thing is imposing one's values upon another. Another may not have the same value,
mm,
because they don't have this. They haven't had the same experience. They've had another experience. They have another set of values.
I think that's what exactly I tried to do.
And one can't be a good teacher by imposing. Then you're like a controller instead of a teacher.
Mm.
A teacher has to educate, not like, you know, open your mouth, here comes the medicine. Doctor knows better, open wide.
Mm.
As far as they're concerned, they don't even need any medicine. What to speak of open the mouth to take your medicine. I can say Krishna Chandra, a devotee that's now initiated devotee. When we attended, first met him. In fact, the devotees first met him when he attended a program that I was conducting at Champaign-Urbana, and it was a 3-day thing, and he attended all 3 days, and he was arguing, you know, not like viciously, but you know, actively arguing different points of view. But there was some attraction at the same time he was arguing. And he did it in a period of 3 or 4 months. He became, though, less argumentative and more attractive, and became a very wonderful devotee. So it wasn't the change didn't take place because they force fed him. He was attracted, and they fanned that attraction, and through the association of devotees, his nature changed. So he's using that, the critical analytical to, positively became very convinced of Krishna consciousness. That's not going to happen with everybody, but there's, a success story.
So Guru Maharaj, when I see, examples like Srila Prabhupada, is very strong in his approach. It appears like imposing values on others, but done in a very pure way. Is that?
Yeah, and persons that imitate are it's a big mistake. Mm. What's speaking of Bhaktisiddhanta? I know of one devotee who, he's a fan of Bhaktisiddhanta, and he imitates Bhaktisiddhanta. He just disturbs the heck out of everybody, including himself. He can't be happy anywhere. And through his association, others become like him, hypercritical and very disturbed. So anyway, Prabhupada was able, he said specifically, I'm able to do what I do because of my age, he said. But it's not just age. His Krishna consciousness, and he could say it you've seen that little scene, the garden scene in L.A., and there's all those professors and Prabhupada saying they're fools and rascals. Swamiji, it's a little strong. How about? Rascal is the sum and total of mistaken. He laughs, and they laughed. They because they could recognize in him, they felt, this is this experiential thing, they felt, here's a spiritually elevated person. They can take it from him. His authority was his Krishna consciousness. And with that authority, then he was elevating people. Mm-hmm. In some cases it means, something that's very direct, that's meant to, relieve one of an unwanted burden. Mm-hmm. And it takes a very expert, qualified, capable person to do that. And even then it should be done sparingly. Mm-hmm. And with discrimination, because otherwise it looks like, here comes Parashuram with his chopper. Thank you.